Donna and Dr. Ghulam Munda are the envy of many.
People like to talk about the young blonde girl that was involved with the older doctor, and it was good gossip.
Their May-December romance lasts a quarter century.
They were very romantic, yes.
I think he did genuinely love her at first.
Until a mysterious gunman blows away their flimsy facade of perfection.
Her life shattered.
I think she's a greedy, selfish, manipulative person who only cares about herself.
To me, I just see evil in his soul. You know, he's not a soul that's looking to the Lord. He's a soul that's working for the other side.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. It's the late 1970s, and high school cheerleader Donna Smouse has just graduated.
I think she would have been seen as a pleasant, all-American girl.
We all came from basically middle-class families, good Christian families, went to school during the week, went to church on Sunday, never really got into any trouble.
In fact, Donna spends most of her time hanging out with her parents. She's especially close to her father, Ross.
I know she wanted to please her mother, and I know she very much wanted to please her father.
She was never a mean individual. She was never one that would gossip about other people. She always, you know, was just always available for her friends whenever they needed something.
She always kind of walked on her toes. That's why I think of bouncy and bubbly. You know, she was just always up and positive.
After high school, Donna swaps her pom-poms for work as a secretary and starts a romance that sets the tongues wagging in small-town Hermitage, Pennsylvania.
She met Ghulam the year after we graduated from high school, and they started dating then. He was the first, you know, serious commitment that she had.
You know, even from the time that they started dating, people like to talk about the young girl, the young blonde girl that was involved with the older doctor, and it was good gossip.
The couple meets in 1978, the year Donna turns 19. Dr. Ghulam Munda is already in his 40s. Ghulam has a successful urology practice in the same medical building where Donna works. He was born in Gujarat, India, but he left his family behind to study in the States.
People used to ask, which part of Gujarat are you from? And he used to say, I'm from the same place where Mahatma Gandhi was. He was very proud of that.
When I think about Ghulam and Ghulam's personality, in some ways I can kind of describe him the same way as I described Donna. He was bouncy, he was bubbly, he was outgoing, very charismatic.
Like to make friends and talk to everybody, even people at the hospital, people, janitors, housekeeping, anybody.
He was very, like, kind of flirty, flirtatious personality, goofing around.
The ultimate doctor. He was kind and compassionate.
The couple's age difference is hard to ignore.
A lot of folks said that she was a daddy's girl. And a lot of people said those two things went hand in hand, being a daddy's girl and looking for older men.
She was very hesitant on developing the relationship initially because of the fact that there was such a big age difference.
But the charming doctor doesn't give up easily.
He bought her a DeLorean, and at the time it was a $17,000 car, which was a very expensive car.
We were all just from your basic all-American middle-class family, and all of a sudden one of us in our group is dating someone that's, you know, dropping cars off in their driveway, you know, so that was, it was surprising.
And I remember it was a very long conversation about the pros and cons of keeping the car, but she had decided that she was going to ask him to return the car.
Donna doesn't just catch the eye of the charismatic doctor. She also attracts the notice of local busybodies.
They build a stereotypic image of young gold digger, you know, looking to make good for herself. even to the point where they would call her parents' house, or they would call Donna herself, and they would make comments as to, you know, how can you let your daughter date someone that's 20 years older than her? And is your daughter a gold digger? What's she out to get?
If it bothers her family, Donna doesn't let on.
I'm sure that was very troubling to them. But they knew Donna and respected the fact that Donna was making a wise decision. And in Donna's mind, it was probably more troubling to Donna that it troubled her parents than it was troubling to her.
Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see Donna's desire to be taken care of as a key part of this budding romance.
There was a lot of gossip among other people about their relationship. And this could either have a negative or positive effect on the relationship. Negatively, it could make them question one another and start to listen to what other people said. On a positive side, it could actually pull them together. They could literally bond and connect over the fact that everyone's against them, but they're a team.
You can have a knee-jerk reaction wherein both people say, no, that's not true. No, there's more to our relationship. And it actually might have caused them not to really do as much introspecting and really critically thinking about, you know, is there any truth to what people are saying? Why are people gossiping about us this way? Is there anything about our relationship that maybe is a little bit superficial?
Ghulam's efforts to woo Donna pay off. Most friends believe they're a good match.
She was much younger than him, but he didn't seem to mind, and she didn't seem to mind.
They were just always goofing around, joking with each other, laughing. That was the only thing I ever witnessed between the two of them.
Good. Used to go to the bars at night. She used to sing in his ear, you know, and when the music is fairly loud in the bars and when they're dancing, and she used to sing loud in his ear.
Hi.
Donna's family embraces Ghulam, especially her parents, Dorothy and Ross.
We take out the entire family to dinner, trips, presents, parties all the time, too. Very, very generous, very kind to them. They genuinely liked him. They thought he was very good for Donna as well.
He did whatever he could to be part of that family and make them, actually spoil them too.
Donna's not in a rush to marry because she wants to finish college. But some of Ghulam's more religious friends do not approve of the couple's casual Western style of dating.
I used to tell him, you should maybe get married. You can't just continue to live a life like that.
After more than 12 years, Ghulam buckles under cultural pressure. The couple marries in December 1990. Donna is 31, Ghulam 55.
She had asked me to be one of her bridesmaids, which thrilled me. But what became even more exciting was the fact that I realized that they were going to do both ceremonies. They were going to do an Indian ceremony as well as a Christian ceremony, which to me showed great respect on both of their parts for each one of their religious backgrounds. It was beautiful. They were happy. They were excited.
They seem very much in love, like almost any couple you see.
I think that they probably thought they were in love. That doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship had the kind of solid foundation that, as psychologists, we want to see to really predict good longevity for the relationship.
An early warning sign for trouble for me is their age difference. They are at physically and emotionally different levels. They have had different life experiences, and so there's a chance that there could be conflict between them.
Is the good doctor actually too good to be true?
A lot of people thought that maybe he had a girlfriend on the side.
That relationship is a complete secret.
After dating for more than 12 years, Dr. Ghulam Munda and Donna Smouse finally tie the knot. He's 55 and she's 31. The couple moves into Ghulam's striking home in a wealthy part of town.
I don't think he thought of her fully as a trophy wife. I think he did genuinely love her at first.
Ghulam helps pay for Donna's education, and she earns 3 degrees. After graduation, she finds part-time work in a local hospital as a nurse anesthetist.
It's a career in which her skills were put to use saving people's lives, keeping people alive all day long.
And I was always so impressed with how dedicated she was to her education and studying and working full-time. I think that he felt that he was giving her a very good life. I think that he gave her as much as he could, as you know, within the constraints of his busy schedule. He took very good care of her and very good care of her family.
Donna's friends say she never entirely gets used to Ghulam's lavish lifestyle.
And I can remember one time she came to pick me up in his Jaguar, and she felt so uncomfortable driving his car. Even after all those years, it still was just kind of out of character for her. She apologized. She said, "I'm sorry." She said it was the only car I had.
But Ghulam's friends tell a different story.
Yeah, I thought he treated her like a queen, you know, since he liked finer things, so she decided that she started to like it too.
Money is not a problem for the couple, and Ghulam is known for carrying wads of cash. He jokes that if he were robbed, he'd make the robber happy.
Yeah, he used to carry a few $1,000, a couple of $1,000 in his pocket. And most of the time when we used to go out to eat, most of us pay with credit cards, but he used to pay by cash.
The couple lives large, and Ghulam shows incredible generosity to the community as well.
Dr. Munda was known as a very charitable man. He gave money to the local mosque where he worshiped. He gave money to fund an academic chair at a local university in Islamic studies.
I got a lot of money from him for the mosque.
He used to say that he was born very poor, so he knew what being poor meant. And so he was beyond generous to people.
From what I was told, that if people couldn't afford payments, he would let them slide.
His patients were given his home phone number. His patients all say he was a delightful person.
Donna embraces Ghulam's Indian heritage.
One thing that she did learn throughout the years was Indian cooking. It was delicious. She was wonderful at it.
Like, you could not tell it. This is cooked by a non-Indian person.
Well, I don't know if she's better than a true Indian woman, but I know she put her heart and soul into it.
Despite Donna's efforts to fit in, she remains an outsider.
I know they both continue to worship at their own respective churches, and I know a lot of the cultural things they melded together and they learned from each other. But I'm sure throughout the years that there were issues that are difficult to overcome when you are from vastly different cultures and vastly different religions.
Ghulam does his best to keep Donna happy by showering her with gifts.
Ghulam loved being wealthy. He loved America. The thing he loved about America was the fact that he had a great life and he had a lot of money because of what he was able to do as a doctor.
When he came here, he was by himself. Young person coming from overseas, and all of a sudden you see a different world, like a kid in a candy store.
He enjoyed being able to go out to dinner and buy very expensive meals. He enjoyed that, being able to travel with his money. He worked very hard, and he enjoyed being able to spend his money.
I think in some ways Ghulam is a sugar daddy. He sort of meets the profile for it. He has a lot of money, and he's willing to pretty much buy her whatever it is that she wants.
She also seems to me like someone who didn't really want to fit the profile at the beginning of being the kind of woman that would respond to a sugar daddy, because she did reject some of the gifts and she didn't seem to want to be talked about as that, but over time became comfortable with the lifestyle that he was able to provide. I think probably because she did convince herself that that wasn't her only reason for wanting to be with him. She, in other words, probably convinced herself that she did have enough feelings for him, that that was just perks of being with him.
Donna makes her own money, but Ghulam's thriving private urology practice is really what pays the bills. Most people agree Donna is happy to let Ghulam take the lead.
You know, he would come home at a certain time, he would require certain things. They had rituals and things that they followed in their daily life, and I think that, and you know, her, what she needed to do for herself came secondary.
People said that Donna needed someone to guide her, someone to control her and make a lot of decisions for her.
He was dominant. He did whatever he wanted, but we don't know what happened inside the house, you know.
Then there are the whispers that Ghulam's not entirely faithful.
A lot of people thought that maybe he had a girlfriend on the side as well.
I assumed that a lot of people took his flirting to mean that he was not faithful.
If you were living in a situation where you were constantly being bombarded by rumors and stories of womanizing on your husband's part, that would be a gradual chipping away at you if you allowed it to be. And those rumors were there all along the way.
People also gossip about why the couple never have any children. None of their friends has a definitive answer.
They used to go out and go on vacation and things like that did not fit their lifestyle to have children.
She was a very caring individual, and I think she would have been a wonderful mom if she had had her own children. But my understanding is that there were medical issues.
Donna wanted children, I think. She mentioned a number of times. But for some reason, he said he doesn't like children.
Donna's friends wonder if Donna gets lonely or depressed.
She was only working one day, sometimes 2 days a week. Ghulam worked very long hours. I know there were many nights he wasn't home till after 8, 9 o'clock at night, and that would be day after day after day. You know, and I think it was during that time where she was spending so much time alone that maybe she became extremely attached to her mom and her dad. They were her mainstay. Her dad in particular.
Yeah, her father was definitely the man of the house, and he was there for Donna, for everything he did, everything that she needed to have done.
Her family said that Donna was always dependent on older men, very dependent on her father, daddy's girl.
I think that Donna and Ghulam grew apart in part because of how they started out their relationship, and in part because of events that occurred within the relationship that became turning points at which they could have come together and their paths could have solidified into one, or they could have diverged, and it seems to me they diverged.
Every person who's in a relationship adapts somewhat to their partner. Because Donna met Ghulam so young, her identity wasn't fully developed. And so she didn't totally know who she is. No one that young does. So I believe that some of who she became was literally because of him. And so as time went on, I think they did grow apart because I think she began to want to have her own identity, want to be her own person, and not know how to manage that.
Everyone hears the gossip. But the couple's closest friends don't see any signs of marital strife.
At least from the outside, he wanted everybody to think that they were happily married, there was no problems. And
he never complained or indicated that there was a problem at all.
But one of the couple's secrets is about to change everything.
She was at a very low point in her life, and I think she was a target.
Things seem fine between Ghulam Munda and his much younger wife, Donna. But the relationship is on shaky ground. Donna is lonely, and Ghulam is never home. Still, a new addition to the family brings them hope. When Ghulam's nephew, Farooq Munda, emigrates from India at age 14, Donna embraces him with open arms.
Donna was very nice to him. She took good care of him. They just pretty much treated him like their own son, since they didn't have any children.
Farouk becomes like a surrogate son to the couple, and Donna helps the boy prepare for medical school.
He became a doctor only because of Donna's help. You know, you have a language problem, you don't know the custom, you don't know the way of teaching here.
I remember seeing her at commencement afterwards, you know, taking family pictures with him and Ghulam, and, you know, so I know she enjoyed that role, that she was able to, you know, play a parent with him.
When Farouk leaves for medical school, Donna loses the closest thing she's had to a child. But she's about to experience an even bigger blow.
What I view as a turning point in Donna's life, where I noticed a difference in Donna, was at the death of her father.
Ross Smouse dies of a brain hemorrhage in October 1998.
Those two were very, very close, practically inseparable. And they had a very, very strong bond. And when he passed away, her life shattered.
She was so depressed. She pulled back bit by bit by bit. She pulled back from everybody and everything. She wasn't answering the phone at all, which to this day hurts me in a lot of ways because I could have been there for her as a listening ear, but she didn't let us.
Anytime a couple or one partner in a couple experiences a major life adverse event, like the death of a beloved parent, it becomes a challenge for the relationship. If the relationship has the right kind of solid foundation. If it doesn't, then the person can end up turning away from the relationship, seeking solace. So I think, again, when these tests of a relationship come up, they tend to show us something about the strength of the foundation that the relationship has to begin with.
Donna's psychological distress seems to turn physical.
I mean, I know when he passed away, it was very difficult for Donna because she was so close to her father. It was very hard for her. And at the same time, I understand that she had some issues with her back.
I heard from people that worked with her that she had started having severe back problems and was in a great deal of back pain, and that Ghulam was taking her all around to find out what the issue was.
The issue turns out to be much more serious than back pain.
I think she became seduced by the proximity of powerful narcotics in her workplace.
Once her father died, she fell into depression. She treated that depression with fentanyl.
Donna's hooked on fentanyl, a painkiller 100 times more potent than morphine. At first, it's to ease her back pain, but it also dulls the sorrow from the loss of her father.
She got some relief, and the next thing she knew, she had an addiction.
I think the combination of losing her father and the pain that she was in was just more than she could handle. And unfortunately, she didn't reach out and ask for help.
Donna, once the All-American cheerleader, is now a full-on drug addict. Nobody knows exactly if Ghulam knew about his wife's addiction, but he finds out when she gets busted for stealing fentanyl from her work. Donna, now 44, is fired from her job and convicted for theft of narcotics. Ghulam stands by Donna's side at her sentencing and begs the judge for leniency.
I have always heard that Ghulam did everything he could possibly do to help her, and at the same time, he made sure to respect her privacy. Nothing was ever in the paper.
No, I kept it a secret. I mean, it was known within the hospital circuit, and since Dr. Munda used to work there in the hospital, so not a whole lot was said openly about it.
I know he loved her, I know she loved him, and I think he was supporting her probably in the best way that he knew how.
I just think he lived by a very high standard, and I'm sure You know, he was devastated when the problems came out at the hospital with, you know, the issues she was having.
Donna's put on probation and goes to rehab.
She probably felt like she failed him in a lot of ways because of the addiction. So she might not have felt comfortable with actually turning to him in the way that she needed to. And unfortunately, she made some very poor decisions as far as, you know, who to listen to.
Donna confides in a new acquaintance, Damian Bradford, a handsome 22-year-old she meets in rehab.
Damian Bradford was known by the street name Chaos, K-A-O-S. We presume that he chose that name because he thought he was going to inflict chaos on the streets.
Damian was also in rehab for drug addiction, and the two met and apparently hit it off.
He was a self-described drug dealer, well-liked by his friends. People who knew him then say he would give the shirt off his back. I'm not sure they recognize that he was buying that shirt with the money he took from them for drugs. But I think in rehab, he was a vulnerable person and fell in with Donna Munda, a much older woman.
Damian, alias Chaos, has been in and out of trouble with the law for both dealing and using cocaine.
It was a low-level dealer. He was nothing big as far as drug trafficking went, but, you know, he made a living and paid his bills.
Donna and Damian join the same Narcotics Anonymous group, and Donna's introduced to Damian's fiance, Charlene McFraser.
Damian was a good-looking black male, muscular, well-spoken, articulate, and he had no problem finding women. There was not a shortage in his life. He did have a serious girlfriend. I think they were on and off, and he had his own place to live. So he was out and about as he wanted to be.
Drug addiction makes a person very self-centered. It takes away their ability to give proper attention, care, and concern to their partner. They become very focused on what it is that they want and they need, and that's a very big shift for this relationship because it's not how it was in the beginning.
In some ways, rehab is like a summer camp for totally dysfunctional people. You know, these are not typically people who are at a place in their lives where they have any business trying to form a new relationship that has any chance of having any kind of real solid foundation.
It's really typical for someone who goes to rehab to connect with someone else who's been in rehab. And for Donna, that's Damian. It's somebody who understands what she's been through, what it felt like to deal with an addiction. And so they feel a special bond towards one another that she probably doesn't have with her husband.
And all through this time, even with Donna in rehab, Ghulam remains worried.
He just walked over to me, gave me a hug, and he said to me, please call Donna and, you know, get together with her. Please call Donna and get together. And he just had this serious look in his eyes, like, you know, he was asking me to, you know, reach out to her. And then shortly after that, things kind of, you know, went downhill.
Then in May 2005, on Friday the 13th, Ghulam tells a colleague he's going to Toledo, Ohio, to visit his nephew Farouk and his new bride.
I remember he was talking to one of the other doctors, saying that he's going to Toledo. So the doctor said, you know, today, what today is? He says, what? He said, today is Friday the 13th. He said, oh, that's a lucky number. I'm not superstitious.
But Friday the 13th will prove to be very unlucky for Donna and Ghulam Munda.
He was well known for having very large amounts of money on him at all times. Everybody knew that.
It was supposed to be a very happy occasion and ended up in such a horrible tragedy.
It's Friday the 13th. Of May 2005. Donna and Ghulam Munda are traveling from Pennsylvania to Ohio to meet Ghulam's nephew Farouk and his wife.
So they set off in the car, and Dr. Munda was driving his Jaguar with Donna Munda in the passenger seat and Donna's mother in the back seat. They stopped in Ohio, I think, for a bottle of water at a convenience store. And at that time, Donna said that her husband may have flashed a quantity of cash.
After about an hour, they stop again to change drivers at an emergency pullout.
So they pulled over, she got out of the car, and they began to exchange seats, but a car pulled up right behind them and stopped.
And this guy came out, and he was wearing a hoodie, and he came up to the passenger side door and wanted him to hand over his wallet.
And after the doctor gave it up, the thief shot him in the head. So the nephew was driving by, also on his way, to show the new home to his uncle.
He was driving from Pittsburgh to Toledo, and he was about 10 minutes behind them on the turnpike.
Recognized his uncle's car and stopped at the crime scene, got out to see what was happening, discovered his uncle in the back of an ambulance being treated, and Donna Munda having hysterics by the side of the road.
But it's too late. Ghulam is dead.
I was at a high school baseball game, and a doctor, his son was on the team, came to the game and had told us what he had heard, and it was devastating.
I can remember distinctly, I had just left my house, I had gone down the road to a greenhouse, had bought a bunch of plants, was pulling back in my driveway, and my sister-in-law called me, and she said, "You better sit down."
It was such a shock. And they cannot really describe it even.
The Ohio State Highway Patrol leads the investigation. They find a shell casing to a 9mm handgun, but have no decent eyewitnesses. Dorothy and Donna are too shaken to describe the shooter or his vehicle.
There were a number, I want to say probably 3, 4, 5 reports of eyewitnesses who claimed to have seen either the attack or the aftermath. And there were a number of different descriptions of the vehicle, of the assailant.
The funeral is just days later.
Monday, we had a Muslim funeral for him.
Donna was, you know, just sitting there and crying and, you know, inconsolable. So she would not even sit in a chair next to the casket. She was sitting on the floor, put her head on the casket.
She was trembling so badly she could hardly stand up. I mean, she was just, her whole body was just shaking and trembling. And she only said two words to me, and the only thing she said was just, "Oh, Kim." And that was all she said. So we just hugged and held each other.
And I remember saying to her, you know, "What are you going to do? He was your whole life." And she just cried. She just absolutely cried. And she just looked at me and said, "I know."
The last words that my husband...
Donna makes a televised plea for witnesses to come forward.
"Give me my wallet."
I believe it was a Sunday where I saw Donna Munda on a local TV station being interviewed about the slaying.
And the look on his face was sheer terror.
She was begging for information.
6 days after the shooting, there's a shocking revelation.
We were sitting in our house, and the news flash came that a person of interest has been identified. Damien, he was the person of interest.
Charlene McFraser, Damien's fiance, comes forward. She tells police that Damien and Donna are having an affair. Where Ghulam was 24 years older than Donna, Damien is 22 years younger.
One of the major turning points was that Charlene actually admitted to investigators that Donna and Damien had been dating. And that seemed to break a lot of it loose. And also, I believe one or two other people had gone anonymously to the police and said, look, she has a boyfriend. Here's who he is. You need to take a look at him.
In Damien's apartment, investigators find plenty of evidence to connect Damien Bradford to Donna Munda.
There were anabolic steroids found in his apartment. Those were provided to him by Donna Munda. They found some towels that had blood on them from when Donna and him had sexual relations.
They also find 19 $50 bills that they suspect came from Ghulam's stolen wallet.
They knew pretty quickly that they had probably zeroed in on their best lead in the entire case.
Donna maintains she didn't recognize the shooter, so police don't have enough to put Damien away. Then Charlene gives him an alibi.
I think Charlene wanted to protect Damien. She did tell investigators there's no way that he could have killed Dr. Munda because he was with her at the time.
The tawdry story is all over the news.
As I was watching this unfold on TV, my jaw was on the ground because I had no idea about the drug addiction. I had no idea about the rehab. I had no idea about her meeting Damien until that started to come out.
Well, we were honestly very indignant and also hurt. We treated her like as our own. One of my kids, when she heard it, they said, oh my God, I feel dirty.
Weeks after Ghulam's death, police still don't have enough evidence to charge Damien, but he's thrown in jail on drug charges. Authorities listen in on Donna and Damien's conversations, hoping to record some kind of confession, but all they get are proclamations of love. Finally, a year after Ghulam's death, police get the break they've been waiting for through Damien's cell phone records.
As time wore on, that alibi fell apart as investigators kept digging, and they knew pretty quickly that Damien probably was out on the road the day of the murder.
Tower tracking of their cell phones puts them in different states the night Ghulam Munda was murdered. Charlene was in western Pennsylvania, and Damien was on the Ohio Turnpike, the very place where Ghulam was murdered. He is now the prime suspect, and if convicted, he faces a life sentence or the death penalty. But he has a few tricks up his sleeve.
They wanted Donna so bad that they made him a deal that he could have never turned down.
Until she broke her promise to him, he buried her.
Donna Munda's drug dealer lover could now face murder charges in the shooting death of her husband, Dr. Ghulam Munda. With Damien's trial fast approaching, his attorney, Mike DeRiso, is counting on the fact that Donna will say she didn't get a good look at the shooter to cast reasonable doubt that Damien's the trigger man.
So our goal would have been to have Donna testify. She had already given statements to the police. If she testifies consistent with her statements, Damien would have either been acquitted or convicted.
But Donna decides not to testify. If called to the stand, she can refuse to answer by pleading the fifth.
At this point, we knew we would lose the case, or at least it would be a worse case without Donna testifying. Damien was angry. He was upset. He was hurt. He was tearful. A bag of emotions. And literally, after he thought about it for 15 or 20 minutes, we talked about how that decision affects our case, effectively blows it out of the water. And he told us the whole story as far as what had happened, that Donna was the mastermind. She was the manipulator. She thought of it. She put it together.
In exchange for a lighter sentence, Damien admits to being the trigger man.
What it took for Damien to flip was the realization that Donna was no longer on his side. Donna's message by taking the fifth was, you're on your own, good luck, can't help you.
It was a classic case of the attorneys pitting the clients against each other and see who gave in first.
Authorities have suspected Donna for 14 months without finding solid evidence. But now they have a witness against her.
Very quickly, from the surveillance footage at the rest stop, it became clear that no one really was watching them. He had not flashed cash like she said happened. In fact, she had his wallet almost the entire time. Investigators didn't quite understand why it was so convenient that they pulled over to the side of the road, that the gunman was able to walk up to the car as well.
Now, why the wallet was stolen and then the thief felt he still had to kill the doctor was a big question. And why did the thief kill the doctor but not the other two witnesses?
I saw Donna Munda on a local TV station being interviewed about the slaying. She just seemed off, is about the best way I can describe it. She just did not seem sincere. And when she was sobbing that somebody has to know something, please come forward, it just rang hollow.
In her statements, Charlene told police that Donna and Ghulam were on the verge of divorce because of a call she'd made to the doctor telling him about the affair. Investigators publicly state Donna had more to gain from her husband's death than she did from divorce.
The doctor was worth more to her dead than alive. She would get more money inheriting.
In terms of the prenup and the will, I'm not sure I can disclose, but I can tell you that had she left or divorced him, she would have gotten significantly less. Had he died and the will kicks in, she gets more.
With Damien pointing his finger at Donna, there's now enough evidence to bring her to trial.
When he got on the witness stand, he went through everything. He admitted that, you know, they agreed to share the money. And then the prosecutor asked, what were you going to do after you received the money? And he said, I was going to leave her. And it was like somebody punched her. She was sobbing, crying. It was just, the physical reaction to it was just amazing. I'd never seen anything like it in a courtroom before.
We see people sometimes, defendants, crying in the jail cell or crying on the witness stand or crying in the courtroom, and people say, oh, those tears looked so genuine. They may be, but people cry for different reasons. Some people cry because they regret something that's happened, and some people cry because they're worried about what's going to happen to themselves.
I believe that all of Donna's emotional outbursts are connected to what was ultimately going to happen to Donna. Oftentimes, sociopaths appear remorseful because they're shedding tears, but we experts know that their emotions are about what ultimately is going to happen to them as a consequence of what they did.
Damien tells the court how Donna became his sugar mama.
They met each other at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I believe she pursued him, she introduced herself, and shortly thereafter, they began to have a relationship. They were involved in a very sexual relationship. She began to pay his rent and his car, and she was probably giving him in excess of $7,000 to $8,000 a month in gifts and cash. Damien comes from a place where money was hard to come by. Yeah, he was impressed by it, as a lot of people who don't have money are, and then he just went from there.
Damien says Donna's marriage took a turn for the worse after Charlene's phone call. Ghulam begged Donna for a divorce and even offered her money.
It continued to deteriorate to the point where Donna says that Dr. Munda offered to divorce her, offered her $1 million settlement, and that would be it. Marriage would be over.
But Damien claims Donna refused and told him she wanted her husband's estate and life insurance policies.
Donna wanted as much money as possible, and she convinced Damien that they could be together, that she would share this money with him. He would be living on easy street for the rest of his life.
Damien testifies Donna was already plotting to kill her husband.
She used Damien to do what she wanted, through sex, drugs, and money.
Damien says he'd made a previous attempt on the doctor's life at the mosque. He says Donna asked him to shoot Iftikhar Chatta if he got in the way.
He's watching the doctor leave the mosque. Damien was going to kill him there. And then Damien's conscience kicked in, and he left.
It was a close call, and actually it was thanks to Damien that he spared us.
On Friday the 13th of May, Donna texted Damien when it was time to go, and he trailed them to the emergency pull-off.
He made a deal with the devil. That's Donna, and he got burnt.
But Donna's attorneys say that it's the prosecution that's guilty of an unholy alliance. They argue Donna is innocent, and Damien Bradford acted alone.
They were willing to make a deal with the devil, and Damien Bradford undoubtedly is the devil.
She'd protested her innocence from day one and had been pretty emotional about the fact that she did not do this.
I'm not sure why people have made that connection. I don't know why that just because she did have an affair with Damien Bradford, why the logical conclusion was that she had a role in his murder.
Anybody that knew Donna for any length of time knows that she was not, you know, some evil black widow spider that was going to pull her mother into some scheme to have her husband killed. That's ludicrous.
Donna would never put her mother in harm's way like that. Never. It was unfathomable.
A psychological expert testifies Donna is easily manipulated by dominant men.
There's an individual who almost to a fault felt a need for her own self-worth to satisfy another individual. In school, she made sure that she became, for example, like a cheerleader because that she thought her father would want. Donna and Ghulam didn't want to have children because Ghulam was concerned that if Donna became pregnant, it would ruin her figure. She got a nose job at the age of 20 because Ghulam did not like something about her nose. And then it carried right on to Damien.
And Donna to Damien was like chum to a shark. I mean, this guy had 5 women going at the time. He was dealing drugs. He saw Donna with Tiffany and big diamonds and driving a Mercedes-Benz. Donna fell in love with Damien, and Damien fell in love with Donna's money.
I think that he saw dollar signs and became aware of what her travel plans were, and on his own decided that he was going to kill the doctor.
But text messages and tower tracking records give credibility to Damien's story.
Everything that he said was backed up by phone records, cell phone tower records, everything. It all matched up.
It seems much more likely to me that Damien and Donna were two peas in a pod in a way, where they both felt entitled enough to serve their interests through helping each other achieve the same goal, which was to eliminate Ghulam and free up a bunch of assets that the two of them could then share. In fact, I'm not even convinced that had that plan worked, Donna wouldn't have been Damien's very next victim.
Although I think it's possible that Damien was under Donna's spell, I would never say that someone could be manipulated into murder. Those were premeditative actions that he took upon himself on his own, with his own mind, with his own hands. I don't think anyone's manipulating anyone. I think this is a couple of addicts that came together because they want what they want out of a relationship. And in this case, they both benefited from Ghulam dying. They both thought they would be able to get money and go off and do whatever they wanted to with it.
The jury doesn't believe Donna is innocent. In July 2007, Donna is found guilty of murder for hire and sentenced to life in prison.
She has repeatedly told me in letters that she had absolutely no involvement in Ghulam's murder. No involvement at all.
Damien is sentenced to 17 and a half years for interstate stalking.
To me, I just see evil in his soul. You know, he's not a soul that's looking to the Lord. He's a soul that's working for the other side.
As bizarre as this is going to sound, Damien's not a horrible person. What he did is horrible. How he did it was horrible. And yes, he shot Dr. Munda in cold blood. But he would not have done so but for the efforts of Donna Mundo and the selfishness and the manipulation and the hatred in that woman.
Dr. Munda was a very well-respected man in his community. It's a tragedy that he died. And we can only remember him well. I think we can be happy that justice was served. Is that enough? I don't know.
I want to remember him as a very, very good physician, very good surgeon, and one of my best friends, almost like my brother, and I really dearly miss him.
Yeah, it was awful. It's okay.